Inside Lacrosse Podcast.
Welcome, everybody, to the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I'm Clint Ketchick, along with Terry Foy, for our second podcast of the season. I hope you enjoyed the first one. If you do, please post it on Twitter or YouTube or Facebook and get it out there, and we'll continue with this outstanding program. Terry, when I look at this week, we've got a really strong list of guests, but there are six games nationally this week that are just unbelievable games for March 1st. Games like Loyola Lehigh, the ACC games are stacked with Maryland, Duke, North Carolina hosting Notre Dame. You've got another critical battle in Ohio, Penn State, Princeton, Hopkins, and then, of course, the televised game on Saturday night at 7:30 on ESPN3. Virginia hosting Syracuse. I think it is an amazing weekend for March 1st.
Yeah, and to be honest, you know, it's been this weekend for a long time, and I think that whether it was the Face-Off Classic or anything else, this is the weekend when you really start to feel like the college lacrosse season starts, and it should start. And I think that, you know, all of the things that have happened so far, there have been 97 Division I games played. There have been 8 overtime games, 11 one-goal games, and 11 two-goal games played so far this season. Those numbers are all up from last year. And I think that I've made the point a couple times, one of the downsides to the early start of the season is that there are so many good games. You know, Loyola Virginia, Loyola Penn State Notre Dame, these all come to mind, that fans miss because they're just not ready for lacrosse season to start. That being said, hopefully everybody looks at the calendar, sees it's March 1st, says it's time for lacrosse, and makes sure that they tune in for whatever they can, be it online or on ESPN3 this weekend.
Starting the Patriot League, where Loyola travels up to Lehigh. It's a league game. The Mountain Hawks have kind of dominated that league in the last two or so years. This is a game I really think all signs point to the Greyhounds, though. And unless Matt Pouillon, Lehigh's goalie, can stand on his head, I see Loyola taking it to a Lehigh team who's undefeated right now, but they really haven't played the toughest of competition. And I think all signs point to the Greyhounds.
Yeah, Poyan's at 59.7% this season, and there's no question that he has the capacity to get really hot and you know, have like a 16-save, 4-goal-allowed type game. That being said, your point is well taken. I mean, they've got wins over Furman, Marquette, a 1-goal win over Villanova, and it's worth, you know, everybody noting that Villanova is really banged up right now, and, you know, they have some issues offensively, and they were, you know, Lehigh was only able to put up 7 goals on the Wildcats and won a 7-6 game, and then Lehigh coming off of their Patriot League opener, a win over BU 10-7 up in Boston. So, you know, I think that when you look at the trajectories each team has taken so far, even though Lehigh is undefeated and Loyola has a loss, it being in overtime almost a month ago now at Virginia, I agree with you that the trajectory suggests that Loyola is probably the team that should be favored in this one.
Yeah, it's going to play hard. Roll call. I love Coach Kevin Cassis and what that program's done. This is a big test for them. Let's move things over to Big Ten for next year. Penn State, big win last week against Notre Dame. They travel to the Horseshoe, playing in Ohio Stadium against an Ohio State team that got their first win last week against Marquette. This is one where I think Penn State grinds and grinds and grinds. They defend Jesse King, and I see the Nittany Lions with Austin Kout holding Ohio State to less than 7 goals.
I mean, it's hard to imagine. I don't see that. I think that Penn State is a good defensive team, but I think Ohio State is a better offensive team than they've shown so far. And, you know, they're a team that's averaging better than 10 goals a game to this point, playing Hopkins, UMass, and Marquette. And I would say that the thing that I would expect to see from this one is a little bit more of that roundedness in their offense, not necessarily as much Jesse King as you saw in the Johns Hopkins game. And hopefully now the Buckeyes have had an opportunity for some of those guys, be it Reagan Como, you know, Turner Evans, a couple of the other guys that they expect to have big seasons. You know, those guys feel a little bit more comfortable, a little bit more in the course of the season, coming off of a 4-goal win over Marquette. And then the other aspect of this game that I'm curious about, you mentioned obviously it being in the Horseshoe, it being a, you know, portent of the Big Ten to come. But I do wonder, because the ECAC is, you know, still with Fairfield coming off their first loss, Air Force not necessarily getting off to the start that one might have expected, or certainly Air Force fans would have hoped, Ohio State still very much in control. I wonder how important the staff, Nick Myers and his team, feel this game is in terms of the overall goals that this team has?
I think that's an advantage for Penn State, because without the CAA automatic qualifier, they know that every game is almost a must win, and this is a game they have to have. If you're a fan of the Nittany Lions, this is an absolutely critical ball game. I think they exploit a weak Ohio State face-off game, and I believe the Buckeyes right now are on a streak of 0-10 on the extra man. Let's bring things up to New Jersey. It's always listed as a barometer game, because in years when Johns Hopkins beats Princeton, that's usually a harbinger of a strong season. That wasn't the case last year. They lost to Princeton at home. The Tigers really killed them on loose balls in the middle of the field. Princeton comes in just with one game under their belt. Slow start. Loved what I saw from Thomas Schreiber. Loved what I saw from Mike McDonald down low. I think I touted him a couple weeks ago to you, Terry. I said the kid's sitting on a 40-plus goal season. And this game could go either way. I think it's going to be it's a fascinating matchup, and I don't have a strong opinion either way.
I think it's a little bit of a strength on strength, because when I look at Hopkins and I look at, you know, personality-wise, who do I like the most? You know, I come to a guy like Mike Pellegrino, and when I look at Princeton, it's Tom Schreiber. And I'm not certain who they're going to try to put on Mike McDonald, but I think that Hopkins should be ready for him schematically. But then at the other end, where Princeton is so young defensively, a little bit in flux in the goalie spot, and Hopkins, you know, we've talked about it a number of times, they're still... they don't seem like they're a team that's going to win very many athletic matchups at the attack and you know, potentially at the midfield, at least in terms of the guys that they've seen the most production out of, like a freshman John Crawley, who came in as an attackman. So, like I said, I think I can see this as a little bit as a strength-on-strength in terms of, you know, there's probably going to be a little bit more talent at the Princeton offensive end of the field, but that doesn't necessarily mean that I think one team has a distinct advantage over the other. And I agree with you. I think that whichever team wins this game can feel pretty confident moving forward as they enter meatier parts of their schedule.
Yeah, I kind of like the over. For some reason, I think both teams are going to be able to score. If there was one stat that I'm charting, it's non-face-off ground balls. Hopkins did not do well in that department against Ohio State. They get a lot of ground balls off the face-off, but the 50-50 balls, both in their defensive zone and the middle of the field, the Jays have to be stronger in that department if they want to compete with the athletic teams coming up. When we speak of athletic teams, we move to the ACC. Maryland-Duke, I think you can watch that game on Terps TV. Duke's undefeated. Maryland's coming off with just a monstrous win. This is a game I think will be a little lower scoring than most people anticipate. I think you have two strong face-off players. I think the significant edge for Maryland is between the pipes. They have a better goalie with Nico Amato. I don't care who Duke puts out there. Nico Amato is a guy that can get Maryland to win in this ball game, but I would favor Duke by a goal in what I believe will be a slow-tempoed, low-scoring game.
That's interesting. I wouldn't necessarily predict a slow tempo, but one of the things I am interested in is how Maryland, you know, so one of the things that Duke's defense brings to the field that very few other teams can is their size and their physicality, and it's one of the things that, you know, Maryland sees every day in practice, but they really haven't seen to this point in the season, because even, you know, in their Syracuse matchup, they weren't necessarily dealing with teams that were, you know, defenders that were that big and physical and strong, as they will with guys like Lobb and you know, maybe Carroll isn't necessarily the biggest guy, but, you know, they got a couple others, Luke Dupree
that's
Hibbs.
A big defense. Hibbs, yeah. Dupree, yeah. Bob, so, Casey Carroll. So, that's as long and lanky as it gets.
For sure. And so, you know, I'm interested to see how Maryland's offense manages that adjustment. But like I said, you know, they have the advantage of playing against probably the second biggest defense in college across every single day. And to your point about not caring who they throw out in goal, you know, Luke Aaron came in with a lot of hype. You know, he's a good goalie. He's at 68% to this point. Obviously, the level of competition will get ratcheted up a little bit. So I don't know. I mean, the unknown is something that I'm interested in, because this is going to be an opportunity. You know, Duke has done crazy things with their goalie. You know, it's not an uncommon thing to see. And I think that, you know, this could be an opportunity for whomever gets the nod to make a name for himself and solidify himself going forward.
Let's stay in the ACC and head down to Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Undefeated, leading the country, I believe, in scoring offense and scoring defense. They really haven't played anybody, let's be honest. Against the Notre Dame team that stubbed their toe last week against Penn State. Didn't have any answers to his own defense, but Carolina's not playing any zone. this should be a really good game. I think I can make a case for both teams scoring goals in this game. I love Carolina's attack and their ability to score in unsettled situations, whether it's riding, ground balls, garbage around the goal. They'll find creative ways to score against a Notre Dame defense that's very good.
Not because I disagree, but just because I'm curious as to what your argument is for Notre Dame. What is the argument for Notre Dame scoring goals?
Carolina's defense is supposedly better than it was last year, but it's still the Achilles heel of that team.
Okay.
Against quality opposition. I mean, you know, they're starting Tafani down low with
Jordan Smith.
Jordan Smith. Yeah, I like their pull. So Patrick, and I like their shorties a lot with Ryan Creighton, and Mark McNeil's going to play in that role. But I just think from a team standpoint early on in the season, it's a raise in level for Carolina that really hasn't played any talented offensive teams. Notre Dame coming off that loss, I believe they'll go down there and score some goals. So I think this game's going to be a little more higher scoring than most.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised by that. I was just curious because, you know, in what I was able to see from Notre Dame's offense against Penn State last weekend, it just didn't seem like they were winning athletic matchups in very many spots. And you know, that to me is one of the things that's going to be more important against Carolina, because they are so athletic defensively. If you're going to score, you want to score via breakdowns. And I think that's what's, you know, most interesting to me. I'm curious to see how much Evan Connell plays. I thought he was excellent for Carolina last year in terms of helping to establish a tone, and I don't think he's been playing as much in the early going this year, so that's going to be one thing I'm going to take away from this matchup.
Yeah, face-offs and goaltending to me seem like a push, but you never know in those two categories. But I think this is our sixth game. We'll finish up with Syracuse heading to Virginia, 7:30, ESPN3. It'll be replayed on ESPNU, I believe, on Sunday morning at 9 o'clock. I spoke to both coaches today with our crew of Eamon McEnany and Paul Carcaterra and producer John Kettering. And it was interesting. You know, Virginia's undefeated. They've had some close shaves early on. They're starting to develop as a team. I think what's most notable about Virginia, improved shooting percentage this year. It's up about 7% or so. Last year is around 25, 26. I think they're around 33 right now. And I asked Coach Sarge about it. He said, well, our first middies are fresher this year. They have more depth. So they're not wearing a Rob Emery and a Ryan Tucker into the ground. And because of that, their shooting percentages have gone up. And also the field is more balanced. James Pinnell on the right wing, Mark Cockerton on the left wing. He compared their offense a lot to what Loyola did the year that they won the national championship with that righty-left wing combination.
And I can see that. I would be interested to see whether or not they'd be able to shoot from range with the efficiency and the effectiveness that Sawyer and Lusby did, because I think that is what separated them. Cochran and Pinnell probably have the edge as it relates to their ability to turn the corner and distribute as well. But one of the things that, you know, I think might be fans might be susceptible to is just kind of, you know, selling a little too early on this Syracuse team. I mean, you know, if there has been a continuing issue with what Virginia has been able to do over the last four seasons, it's been, I think, in their ability to be cohesive defensively. And I think that when you compare, and I didn't get an opportunity to see the Syracuse-Maryland game very closely, I've only seen highlights, but when you compare what Syracuse was able to do in the early going off of ball movement in terms of getting good looks, it seems like that would be the type of thing they'd be able to do to Virginia. And I'm not saying that it's going to happen. I'm saying that if they can, I don't think that there's going to be a significant possession advantage the way there was in that first game. And if Syracuse's offense can get Virginia's defense on their heels because of their ball movement, I think that they can be in a really good position to put up a big number.
Here's the deal with Syracuse. Gave up 4 goals last week directly as a result of faceoffs. Charlie Raffa, who's a guest on this podcast, scored 2, popping the ball forward. They also violated 6 times in that ball game. Maryland scored 2 of 3 on those extra man situations. The Terps also scored on 2 quick restarts, where Syracuse defense was not organized. Syracuse's defense, and I believe that whoever plays defense in this game will win. But Syracuse now, talking to John Desko this morning, they have had basically no full field, 100-yard normal game regulation practices. They haven't been able to get in the Carrier Dome due to men's and women's basketball. They've been practicing in Manly Fieldhouse, which is about an 80-yard field. He said it's really hurt their transition from O to D and from D to O. He said it's also hurt them on restarts and any full field concepts. He says that offensively, they've been okay in the 6-on-6. they got a little antsy against Maryland. Defensively, because of some spacing issues, they got spread out against Maryland. They were late to support, and then Maryland riddled them with ball movement. So I expect to see a better Syracuse defense, but at the end of the day, the team who decides to play defense, in my eyes, wins this ball game. Saturday, Maryland hosts Duke. We welcome in Terrapin face-off man Charlie Rapp, coming off a big effort, upgraded in my book from Fogo to face-off man. Two goals in the dome, Charlie. How would you best explain or best describe your performance last weekend?
I mean, it was great to do. I mean, having two goals as a face-off guy is obviously hard to do. I'm happy I got to do it, and I'm just looking forward to this week and the weeks coming up. Hopefully I can provide the same kind of momentum for my team.
Charlie, you know, I'm interested in your perspective on kind of what your role is as a face-off guy, particularly looking at the makeup of this team where you're so veteran and so experienced on defense and have so many new guys on offense. Obviously, there's value in kind of helping to support getting your offensive players more touches all the time. Do you put anything extra on being successful this year given the makeup of the team?
I mean, everyone's obviously trying to do their best. I'm obviously trying to win as many face-offs as possible. I have two of the greatest wing guys in the country, Mike Gerhardt and Brian Cooper. And then, obviously, Mike Chanchal, he's such a good presence to have on the field. He's a leader. He doesn't say much, but he's great to have. He's out there. Joe Cassio also, he supports Mike and everything. They kind of get everyone organized, and getting them the ball as much as possible is definitely a great thing. And then having my defense, I know if I lose a face-off that they're going to be there to support me and stop the ball and get it back up.
Charlie, there was a nice article in the Baltimore Sun about you. Talked about the big knee brace that you've been forced to wear. What are you dealing with, you know, in terms of your health on a weekly basis right now to get yourself out on the field?
I mean, it's tough, but, you know, Amelia, my trainer here, she does a great job with me. She's pretty much like my personal trainer here. She works me every day. She even stitches up like a knee pad for me, special. And I've just kind of adapted my face-off game to how I need to do my stance and everything else. So it's worked out, definitely, and I think I'll be successful with my new stuff, and hopefully it'll keep working out.
Charlie, I need you to help settle a debate that Quint and I have had for a long time. You're at 67% on the year. You've won 39 draws. But what I think is even more important about the way in which your numbers reflect your performance so far is that you've picked up 24 ground balls. It's a really high rate of picking up ground balls to winning faceoffs, which I think is an important number. Is that something you focus on, winning the ball to yourself, because of what control means in the faceoff game?
Yeah, you know, I train with a guy, Matt Schomburg, and he really likes us to control where the faceoff's going and have our wing guys in the right position so that, or have them locking guys off so that I'm in the right position. So, I mean, whichever way it works out, whichever way we decide to do it, I try to get the ball to myself if possible. If not, then I know my wing guys are there to support me and get the ball to them. So depending on how the game's going, I mean, I'll probably pick up more ground balls than others, or they're going to pick up more than me. So it really depends on the team we're playing and what the situation is.
Maryland Duke can be seen on Terps TV this weekend as you square off against Brendan Fowler. It's a guy you know pretty well. What's the game inside the game going to be when you and Brendan, you know, settle over that ball?
Yeah, I mean, I've known Brendan for a long time. We hang out a lot. He's a great guy. He's an awesome player. You know, his achievements last year all speak for themselves. He's a hard worker. It'll definitely be a good matchup, I think, for both of us. It'll be a fun battle to watch, I think, and whenever you get to go against one of the best guys in the country, you obviously want to do your best. So hopefully we'll both have a good face-off tomorrow, you know, on Saturday.
Is there going to be any Chaminade St. Anthony's talk?
I mean, we got Mike Earhart from Chaminade, too. I mean, we definitely bigger over the summer about it. Chaminade St. Anthony's in the locker room here. So I know that on the field, but afterwards we're all friends. So once you're alumni from Chaminade St. Anthony's, you're pretty much friends for life, even with guys like Matt Kavanaugh, Shane Thornton, Sean Mann, like all those guys, they all hang out in the summer. So pretty much when you graduate, it's kind of over from there.
Charlie, we're seeing the knee down technique become really popular across the country at all levels now. What are the benefits of putting that knee down on the grass, and maybe what are some of the negatives?
Yeah, so, I mean, knee down, definitely you have more balance, more power coming off your knee. That's something that Matt Schomburg has been teaching us for a very long time. And then the only disadvantage you can really have from it is guys breaking you. But if you're athletic enough, hopefully you get off the floor and get up and defend the break or defend the face-off guy or try to match up with another guy that could potentially be an offensive threat when you lose the face-off.
Charlie, you mentioned Mike Earhart a couple times throughout this, and one of the things I'm interested in is you mentioned wing play, and I think that sometimes, and this is I think even more true over the last couple of years, is the FOGO has become, or the faceoff specialist has become, an even more prominent part of the game. You know, the wing play and the unit as a whole has maybe mitigated in a lot of fans' consciousness or mind. You obviously made a transition from one of the best long stick middies in the country last year, and Jesse Bernhardt being on your wing. Now he's on the sideline in a different role. What's your thought just in terms of how the long stick middie dynamic has played out for you over the course of the last two seasons?
I mean, Jesse was obviously, he's one of the best, if not the best, pole in the country. I have the utmost respect for Jesse. I think everyone around the locker room does, Coach Tillman. But Michael Earhart, he's an awesome pull, and I don't know what I'd do without him, basically, on my wings. He's a big dude. He's rangy, so it's great to have him on my wings. And you know what? They play a huge role. Even if it's not picking up ground balls, it's holding off my wing guys so I can get my ground balls, or Brian Cooper so he gets his ground balls. So it's all, like, we all work with each other. Having a long stick is a huge advantage for me, especially with a guy like Mike Earhart, who's so big and athletic.
You mentioned Michael Earhart. You got Corin Murray, Nico Amaya between the pipes, Chan and Chuck. And then a lot of young faces on offense. Jay Carlson's a proven goal scorer. But you got all these freshman guys now. What's it been like, and how do you, you know, get these young guys, how do you teach them the Terp way, and how do you keep them hungry, and how do you keep their heads from swelling outside their helmets?
Yeah, well, we have so much good leadership on the team. Like I said, Mike Chansaw, Mike Earhart, even guys like Casey Iketa. Nico's a great leader here, and they just kind of, the freshmen this year have done a great job of kind of watching the older guys and learning from them, and the older guys have done a great job of teaching the younger guys. And it's something that's just been passed down throughout the years. I mean, even when guys come back, they tell the younger guys what's going on, and that's the great thing about Maryland is that it's such a great tradition and so rich that people just listen and respect their alumni, and they know how to do stuff around here.
To that note, I mean, one of the things I'm interested in, Charlie, is just kind of the attitude in the locker room right now, because, you know, I'm curious as to what the reaction to beating Cuse in the Dome was as it compares to then quickly having to turn around and focus the attention on the number one team in the country coming to town this Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, being Syracuse is obviously a big accomplishment for us, and we were very excited and everything, but it's a new week now, so once it hit Monday, we kind of turned over the page, and hopefully we'll get a win at Duke this weekend because, you know, they're a great team and they're way different than Syracuse. Brendan's a great faceoff guy, as you said. They switch goalkeepers. They have a great offense. Jordan Wolf, Josh Dion, Case Mathias. They have Casey Cattell coming back on defense. So we know that we have to turn the page on Syracuse, kind of look forward to Duke and focus on this week.
Charlie, how much of do you use film study? Do you, you know, break down the clips of the guys you're going up against?
I mean, we watch film a lot. We watched before practice, and a lot of the guys, like freshmen even, they love to get into the office, watch film with the coaches. Something that's kind of also been passed down, like I said before. And the guys are always just willing to learn and get better. So people are pretty much getting in film every day, hopefully, or almost around here.
Do you use it specifically in the face-off matchup?
Yeah, I watch film at least like two or three times. I try to watch as much as I can, you know, bouncing between school and lacrosse. But it's definitely something that's helpful, watching defensive tendencies, offensive tendencies, even at the face-off, actually watching what a guy does, what he didn't succeed at, what he does succeed at. So it's definitely something that's helpful and gives you an advantage in the game.
Charlie Raffa, Terps face-off specialist, as Maryland tries to go to 2-0 in the ACC. And March, to have that record in the league on March 1st would be pretty exceptional. And good luck to you, Charlie, this weekend. Thanks so much for your time.
All right, awesome. Thanks both of you guys.
Our next guest from undefeated Virginia, they're 5-0. We bring in Owen Van Arsdale as the Cavaliers get set to face off against Syracuse, hosting the Orange on a busy Saturday in Charlottesville. Big basketball game on campus with Dickie V, and then the lacrosse game 7:30 on ESPN3. Owen, how would you best describe the start, you know, and the entire month of February?
The month of February went well for us. We sat down earlier this month and thought about how we wanted the month to go, and we all agreed that we wouldn't accept anything other than 5-0. You know, we got there in a way that we wouldn't have predicted with those, you know, 3 1-goal wins to start it off. But, you know, it sort of shows the fortitude that our team has early in the season to be able to pull those out. A win's a win, especially at the beginning of the year. You know, we like to think there's no such thing as big games. You got to respect every opponent, and those 1-goal wins reflect that. You know, we're just doing what we can to pull those games out, and it's good to start the season off with 5 wins in a row.
Owen Van Arsdale, obviously a really close member of the Virginia lacrosse team. I know that you've been around him for, you know, most of your life, and you know, I'm curious about how this season has unfolded for you. You know, as you've taken on, I would imagine a little bit of a different role with Pinnell emerging alongside Mark Cockerton. How do you, in your redshirt junior season, with 18 points to date, characterize the type of player you've become over the course of this year?
Well, with Mark and James playing on either side of me, they're really the go-to-the-goal scorer guys. So, you know, I'm playing more behind the goal, carrying the ball a little bit more, just trying to keep the offense running smoothly, getting the ball to the right people. You know, the superior athletes are the ones around me. I'm just trying to get the ball to the right guys at the right time so that they can make the play and hopefully finish a few plays myself, too.
Oh, and when you look at the numbers, Virginia last year shot about 25-26% of the team. Right now, you guys are up around 33%, which is a pretty healthy net jump of 7 or 8%. Why do you think that is? What are you guys doing better offensively that's leading to a higher shooting percentage?
I think that's due to shot selection. You know, last year we took some bad alley shots and some low angle shots trying to turn the corner, and this year we're just a lot more patient. Waiting for the right guy with the right shot. I think that the possessions where we've gotten good shots this year, we've scored the majority of the time. And so going forward, we're just trying to keep doing that. Keep on staying patient, making sure that we get good looks, because when we do get good looks and get them on cage, we're scoring most of the time.
Oh, and you mentioned that you guys as a team don't want to look at any particular game as a big game, meaning that there's no game that's bigger than another. That being said, I think, you know, Dom has in the past talked about the uniqueness of the Syracuse-Virginia game and the Orange come to town on Saturday. It's going to be a night game. What about this do you think is different, if not necessarily bigger, in terms of this matchup and this meeting?
Well, the history between the two teams is extraordinary, obviously, and I think that the style of play, when we come together, really makes for an exciting game. We both like to get up and down the field, play a lot of transition. It's usually a high-scoring game, and yeah, like Dom says, there's no such thing as big games, but this one's really fun to play in, definitely.
Oh, and the face-offs have been a big storyline nationally so far this season. And you guys are scrapping. You got a bunch of different personnel, some really, really strong wing players. Syracuse, on the other hand, has struggled in that department. From where you sit as a current player, what are your thoughts on the state of face-offs and FOGOs and the rules and the impact of face-offs on the game?
Well, I think that face-offs are incredibly important. Obviously, it's tough to go on a run and take a couple goal lead in a game if you're not winning the ball back on the faceoffs. You know, you can be out playing a team and they can stay in the game due to a hot faceoff guy. And that's, you know, something that you just have to deal with. You know, we've been trying a bunch of different pieces here. I think it's starting to come together. There's different guys emerging. I think we have a sort of faceoff by committee this year. And I think that all the guys are talented. We just need to get everybody at the same page when we're there at the face-off X. And as for the face-off rules, I really like the 30-second penalty after guys jump 3 times in a row. You know, some guys' strategy is just to jump, to out-jump you. Our main face-off guy, Mick Parks, has such quick hands. If the ref is calling a fair game and lets both guys, you know, both guys aren't jumping, he's going to out-quick you to the ball. So I think that's something that is great for us to penalize teams who are jumping early.
keeping with the theme of asking you about things that don't necessarily relate to exactly what your role is on this team, but, you know, to that point, I'm assuming that you can speak pretty well to your goalie situation, given the fact that you're shooting on these guys every day in practice. You know, last season, I think the sense was that it wasn't the reason the goalie position was an area that needed to be addressed in the offseason coming away from the 2013 season wasn't necessarily because of the production or the lack of play, but it was because of the lack of clarity at the position. And it seems like Matt Barrett, even though he's under 50%, has brought a little bit of stability to the back end. Is that a fair characterization? And do you think that, or what's your reason for why, if that is fair, why Barrett's been able to do that?
Right. So, you know, I think that we are really strong at the goalie position this year overall. We have four good keepers, four guys who I would trust out there on game day. And, you know, Matt Barrett rightfully won the starting job. And he's been playing well. You know, you can't expect him to make every save, but you know, one of the key games we had so far this year, the Drexel game that we came out with a one goal win. He had, I think, 16 saves. Played a great game. You know, I think that his confidence has grown a lot after that. And as the goalie at UVA, you know, you're put in some tough positions because of the aggressive defense that we play, and sometimes you kind of have to bail your team out when a guy gets beat. But he's been making the stops that he should, and he sometimes surprises you with a really incredible save also. I think he's been doing a great job so far for us.
What was the biggest takeaway from last night's win over Mount St. Mary's?
Last night against the Mount, we came out a little flat. I think that goes along with what Coach Starger says. No such thing as a big game. You have to take every opponent. You have to play them with your best game. And we came out there and started a little bit slow, and it took us a little while to put them away. We were really sloppy. I think that we weren't quite prepared for what we were going to do on 6-on-6 on offense. But from here on out, I think that we'll take that as a little bit of a lesson that, you know, no matter who you're playing, you have to approach it like it's the biggest game of the year.
Owen Van Arsdale and his Cavaliers take on the Syracuse Orange 7:30 Saturday night, ESPN3. Thank you so much for the time, Owen. Good luck this weekend. Look forward to being able to watch the Cavaliers and the Orange battle once again.
Yeah, thank you, Terry. Thanks, Quinn.
Terrific slate of games this weekend, and one of the best is John Hopkins up at Princeton on Saturday. It's a big game for both programs this year, who are, you know, surfing around the top 10 as we welcome in Wells Stanwyck, attackman. John Hopkins off to a terrific start. Wells, how would you best describe the way you've been able to start this season in terms of your offensive production?
I think I got to credit most of it to kind of the coaches and what we've been working on all year, you know, which has been more just do your job and come out every day and try and get better, a little bit better each day, and try not to take any steps backwards. And it definitely helps when we're playing with guys who all are on the same page and you got some chemistry going.
Well, there was a lot made in the offseason of a changing of style offensively, and I think that, you know, there's one way to look at it, that graduating John Greeley, John Rannigan, et cetera, the style was going to change regardless of whether it was intentional or not. What was your expectation of what type of offensive style you guys were going to play even before the year got started?
Over the summer I talked with Coach Benson a couple times, and we just kept talking through like the guys we were going to have this year and the guys that were going to be playing and how we were going to need to do things a little bit differently than last year just because we didn't have John Rannigan and Greels anymore. So we kind of really just went with going into more of a skillful offense with kind of the skills that we all kind of possessed, which was more stick work and maybe not as athletic as the other guys. And we just kind of started working on that in the fall and have been working on it since then.
What's been the biggest challenge for you making that transition?
I would say just trying to kind of get that chemistry going of like, we're not really as scripted anymore. It's kind of just playing with each other and kind of try and find like a flow to like where everyone's going to be and we never really went with being like, you have to dodge this way, we have to rotate this way. It's kind of just been, if he's over there in that corner, like, we're going to work with whichever way you go and try and get to the right spots and play off of you.
Wells, what do you think is, like, your strongest attribute or the aspect of your game that's most important?
I would say organization, just trying to be organized as much as possible, trying to get everyone in the right sets and be in the right spots to try and make the play that's going to help us do the best.
I made a move last week, Wells, so it was just downright nasty. Back right against a shorty. He kind of looped outside. He stepped out at you, and then boom, next thing you know, you planted and beat him to the inside cleanly. I mean, I think he whipped by about 3 or 4 feet. How would you best characterize the way your dodging game seems to have really, no pun intended, but to kind of turn the corner this year?
Yeah, that's something also that the coaches and I've really been working on. You know, we kind of came to the season saying that you're going to have to beat your man and stuff. And I think through individuals and practice in the fall, we kind of really worked on turning that corner, making the right moves and getting to the right spots that we're going to make guys try and have to make mistakes and then try and capitalize off those mistakes.
You guys, had a really dramatic, impressive debut game, overtime game against Ohio State, and then have really taken care of business against Towson and Michigan, sitting at 3-0 heading into, you know, as Quinn already described, a pretty big Princeton game in terms of, potentially sending each team's season in one direction or the other. How, for Hopkins fans that have paid very close attention to this team, how close to the team you think you are going to become are you currently?
Like I said earlier, we're really focused on just kind of improving each day and getting better and really trying not to take any steps backward. We've been really focusing each day and each week, kind of going one step at a time, which has kind of been relating into one practice at a time and then into one game at a time. And like I said, we're just trying to get better each day and just keep taking steps forward. And if we keep doing that, we hope that we'll end up being in good spots towards the end of the year.
Well, I thought it was interesting before the Ohio State game when we spent time with Coach Petromala. He talked about, you know, changes that he's making program-wide, whether it's, this new offense, a new motion offense, or playing music in practice. What have some of the changes felt like, and why does it seem like it's a happy place right now?
Everyone's real excited. That's another thing we've really been focused on is just coming out every day to be excited. You know, you got to want to be here. You can't just try and come up here and just try and get through anything. You can't try and just get through the workout or the practice. You got to really want to be up here. You got to want to do what we're striving to be and stuff. And I think that's something that's really helped us kind of day in, day out. You know, coach brings out the music and everyone kind of gets pumped up in the beginning and everyone really tries to compete hard against each other. You know, you're playing against your best friends, but for those that two and a half hours out of practice, everyone's going as hard as they can, just trying to get each other better. And I think that really brings out an excitement with the guys.
Who's one guy that, you know, if fans got an opportunity to watch you guys practice, would be like, oh wow, I didn't know that he had that in him.
With someone who like doesn't play, or with someone who.
I don't know, just regardless of whether or not they see the field in games, more so just that the types of things that you see somebody do in practice are different from what fans might expect or might see frequently in games.
Maybe a couple guys, you know. The freshman, John Carley, does some stuff that really jump off the page of you with some of the moves he just makes when he's dodging on someone. He just makes guys go the other way. And then, you obviously got guys like Pellegrino who are just like almost like dominating out in that middle of the field, getting every single ground ball and just bringing energy every day. But I'd probably say those two. And then Eric Schneider, probably when he just gets on a roll, it's almost like you can't score on him.
Well, this week Inside Lacrosse released their national poll and a big article about the MIAA and whether Shaq is leading the charge at Boys Latin and as verbal to Hopkins. How much did you play a part in his recruiting process? Did you just kind of sit back and let it happen, or were you an aggressive salesman?
At the time, with the early recruiting and everything, I was only a couple weeks into my freshman year, and my older brother was at UVA and Shaq was looking at both those schools. And I would say we both definitely wanted to come to each school, but, you know, we really didn't want to force them one way or the other. It was just kind of like, we told them like what we liked about each school. And then we didn't really want to tell them like, come to this school, like do this, do that. Like, you're gonna like this. We wanted him to kind of find his own way. And I think that's what we ended up doing. So I guess you could say I kind of just sat back, but definitely, I tried to influence as much as I could and tried to help him as much as possible.
And Wells, we'll get you out on this one. You know, as Quinn said, big early season matchup against Princeton. It's a traditional rivalry. There have been some great games in the course of the series. What have you seen on film from the Tigers so far? You know, based primarily on their outing against Hofstra.
They looked really good against Hofstra. It was one thing that we all kind of saw. You know, their athleticism definitely jumps off the page at you, and you can see that they've got a lot of talent. And I guess what we've been really focusing on is just trying to see how Hofstra did against them, because they did score some goals. But it's a rivalry game, and in most games like that, it's going to come down to the little plays, like who gets that 50-50 ground ball or who wins those faceoffs. And from there on, we'll just see what happens, because in the past, it's always just a back-and-forth game, and it's just a game of runs.
Well, Stanwyck, Johns Hopkins attackman, we appreciate the time, man. Good luck on Saturday against the Tigers.
Thank you very much.
I got the North Carolina Tar Heels coming in at number 2 on my poll, and this weekend they host Notre Dame. It's an ACC regular season game. Carolina's stacked on offense as we welcome in Joey Sankey, Philadelphia's finest, one of my favorite players in the country. Joey, how would you best describe what you guys have been able to do thus far in the season, racking up big goal totals and playing a lot of people, it seems?
Yeah, well, we've just been focusing on playing fast. Ever since I got to North Carolina, that's been the main focus. And I think that we've been doing well this season so far in playing fast. We've really been focusing on our transition game. And that starts with our defense, and then our D-middies bringing it up the field. I think we have some of the best D-middies in the country, so they're really responsible for sparking our initial offense.
And it seems to me, Joey, like that plays really well into your particular style. And I guess the question I'm curious about is, if you had to choose between, you know, 6-on-6 settled offense, lining up one of the best defensemen in the country, going right at him, trying to make a move and going to the goal, or, you know, some sort of high-flying finish across the crease in transition, just in terms of what makes you more proud, which would you choose?
Well, as a collective offense, I really love when we're in a 6-on-6 offensive set. We're running offense for, you know, 30 seconds a minute possession when we're really getting to that second and third level of our offense. I think that's really the most rewarding aspect, but I also love, you know, in riding game and getting the ball off the ground. I love those scrappy types of goals personally. Those are kind of my favorite, just when things don't go as planned and we still find a way to get it done.
Joey, have you guys locked in on, you know, like a starting attack unit? Is it still a heavy rotation and a lot of guys playing? You know, it's obviously Jimmy Bitter, yourself, is Stevie Pontrello playing down low now all the time, or is he playing some midfield as well?
No, Steve Pontrello was playing attack in the fall for a little bit because Bitter was out, but Pontrello is strictly a middie as of right now at least, and we're pretty set at attack, it seems like. We have the starting attack right now is Jimmy Bitter, Spencer Parks, and myself, and then Pat Foster rotates in a lot. He's a very, very qualified attackman, and he really sparks our offense sometimes when he goes in there and gets a goal for us. So he's been playing really well. So we kind of have a four-man rotation going right now, and I feel like all four of us are comfortable playing with each other.
So this is kind of going back to what you had mentioned a minute ago about liking to make things happen when things go awry. You're tied for the team lead on with 10 ground balls with Steven and Frankie Kelly. Is there any trash talking associated with that claim?
No, we actually haven't even talked about it at all, honestly. But that's one of my favorite aspects of lacrosse is ground balls. I find it one of the most fun parts of the game, honestly. So I really pride myself on picking up ground balls. But no, there hasn't really been too much talk between the three of us on that.
Team hashtag embrace the grind. Grind, not my favorite word, as you know, Joey, but when I think of you and lacrosse, the word grind doesn't cross my mind because I know you love everything associated with it. But in the big picture, how have you embraced the grind?
Well, it's more just we talk about, you know, embracing the grind, and the, you know, process can kind of be interchangeable. We really just talk about, you know, embracing the process of what it takes to play on Saturdays, you know, going through those Monday practices where you're coming off the weekend and everyone's sore, and then, you know, those Wednesdays where, you know, it's midweek and stuff. So it's really just enjoying the process, having fun with each other. I mean, honestly, it's just us kind of, you know, enjoying every day and not just looking forward to game day. So really focusing on the opponent, focusing on ourselves getting better.
Joey, it strikes me that maybe like one of the parts of the process for this team was going to be, you know, replacing some of the senior leadership. And I think anybody that you know, has read my stuff over the last couple of years knows how big of a fan I was of Marcus Holman. And, you know, I think that you and Jimmy, two guys with you know, strong personalities that probably aren't exactly the same as each other's, nor were they the same as Marcus, are probably leading the charge to pick up that leadership role. What's that been like for you personally?
Yeah, there's no doubt that Marcus was a great leader. He was the sole leader of our offense, really. And so it was a great challenge, especially in the fall, just trying to find out who was going to step up. And I think we found that, you know, it wasn't going to be one guy replacing Marcus. And, you know, we don't really have anyone on our team that has those same personality traits as Marcus. It's, you know, we all kind of, Jimmy, Chad, Tutton, we have a lot of guys who kind of just stepped up. And as a collective group, I feel like the three of us, Chad, Jimmy, and I feel like we really grown as leaders. And, you know, we kind of just try and, you know, if one guy's having an off day, the other guy steps up and voices his opinion. So I think we've made up for Marcus's leadership with multiple guys. And Ryan Creighton and Cam Wood are great captains. They've been doing a really great job leading this team. So I think we've really done well trying to make up for Marcus's his leadership.
Notre Dame's in the ACC now, a team known for their defense. What is one offensive key that the coaching staff has been emphasizing this week?
Well, we've really just been focusing on not, you know, they talk about Notre Dame kind of trying to get you to dodge into their V holds and, you know, getting held up. So we've really just been focusing on, you know, dodging if it's not there, not getting caught up with that defender, just moving the ball. And, you know, Coach Bresci always focuses on how, you know, the focus is on us and, you know, our preparation. So we've really just been trying to, you know, focus on the things that we need to work on, focusing on getting to that second and third level of our offense. Because in our first three games, it's kind of been a one dodge and a shot offense because the shot's been there. So against Notre Dame, it's not going to be like that. Their defense is very good. We haven't seen a defense like that this year. So it's going to be interesting, and I hope we're ready for the test because it's definitely going to be a much bigger challenge than our first three games.
One of the things about that test is that, you know, it would be unlikely, it seems, that you'd be able to build such a sizable lead as you were able to in your first three games. And it likely means that, you know, the last couple minutes or, you know, the fourth quarter are going to be more significant to the outcome than they have been. What types of challenges does that present for this team at this point in the season when you're 3-0? You have, you know, won games by double digits, but at the same time, you know that you haven't really been tested over the course of 60 minutes. What are some of the things that you guys are talking about in practice to make sure that if that is what you need to do this weekend, you're going to answer the call?
Yeah, well, we've kind of been talking about throughout the entire game, making that transition where, you know, it's going to be a tight game. And if the offense recognizes that our defense has played a few minutes of defense, and we need to recognize that in transition, and we can't be as risky. You know, we still need to pressure the defense, but in a smarter way. So we've been focusing on that a lot, And you're right. I mean, we late in the fourth quarter, we haven't even really, the starting offense hasn't really been in the game. So that's definitely going to be a big adjustment. And we have a lot of new faces, so it's definitely something that we need to work on. We don't have much game experience in it, but we've trying to simulate that in practice. But I think we'll handle it well if that situation occurs.
Hope you enjoyed this version of the Inside Lacrosse podcast. You can follow me on Twitter at Q Kesnick. You can follow Terry at Terrence Foy. Of course, you can follow all the action on InsideLacrosse.com as this week matures towards what should be a terrific and exciting Saturday, capped off Saturday night, ESPN3, Syracuse at Virginia. That game will be replayed on ESPNU on Sunday morning. Thanks for listening, everybody, and see you next week.
Inside Lacrosse Podcast.